Hi everyone, welcome to Waytad again. I'm putting this here because the video version has its own special little introduction, and I don't want you guys to feel left out. So, if you're here, I want to thank you so much for listening on the podcast feed. I really appreciate having you still on the feed. It's really awesome, it means the world that you're listening, and make sure you also check it out on YouTube at Waytad Pods, as well for some visual jokes and stuff. Okay, have fun, and enjoy! Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Waytad. I am your host, William, and, wow, it feels weird doing things like this now. Hopefully it's not going to throw off my vibe too much. This right here is going to be the update area. Sorry I haven't decorated, but the lighting is pretty good, right? Anyways, I want to thank you so much for tuning in. It means the world to me to have my voice rocketing down your ear canals and giving you a stroke. I mean, brain blast. For updates, all I have is the normal. Make sure to share the show, and yes, that's a threat. Follow Wind Kashika, and make sure to watch them on Twitch. You might even catch me on there. And also, make sure to shop at Mystic Luna for all your sticker, charm, and jewelry needs. But with that, let's talk about what we're all here to talk about. Alright, so we're going to be talking about a Tumblr post today. Kinda. See, I was scrolling through YouTube Shorts one fine afternoon when a post by Galahad Wilder came across my screen. Now, usually any Tumblr post read by an AI talking about Batman would get an immediate skip from me. But the first line captured me. If Batman and Spider-Man switched rogue galleries, none of their villains would last more than 10 minutes against the new enemy. And so suddenly, my mind started expanding at a truly terrifying rate, thinking about the possibilities, how cool it would be, and as I felt the brain blast setting in, I realized what I had to do. I had to talk about it. Unfortunately for you guys, since my friends don't care and also probably have their own opinions and are also imaginary, that means you have to hear it. So if you're going to blame anyone, blame Galahad Wilder for having this brain baby, or Sestrum Nocturnum on Reddit for stealing said brain baby, or whatever AI slop channel it was that punted that baby into the sun. So let's talk parameters. For the sake of this, because I find it wildly entertaining and also don't want to do complex world building, these guys swap universes after being well established. They're not switching storylines or anything like that. They're fighting a magical dimensional wizard that goes pickety-tickety, suck on D's, before they can say what, Batman is in New York and Spider-Man is in Gotham. It's also their first fight of the day, so they're both still fully stocked. Also, given the universes, it's not like they're stuck. Sure, the wizard used some very powerful ancient words, but it's not like Doctor Strange or Doctor Fate or whoever the fuck isn't available to get them back. They know much more powerful spells, like Bedazzle Bedoozle, you now have prostate cancer. So they'll be able to come back pretty easily once they figure out what's going on. So they're aware of what's happening and that they're not in their world anymore. Now, also, we're not going to go into the weird little alternate stories and dumb shit. So no radioactive spider jizz or Batman becoming a god of knowledge after sitting in a super cool special chair and using it to torture a dude in prison. Instead, we're going with the most normal and well-known versions of these characters, with a few special pieces thrown in when it's convenient for me. Hey, what are you going to do? There's some wild shit in these stories. But before we talk about how shit of a time Spider-Man is going to have, let's talk about who these guys are. Because sure, I'm sure you know who Spider-Man and Batman are, but I like to talk. So let's start with Spider-Man, whose power set is just called Spider Powers. Now, you'd be well within your rights to wonder what the fuck that means, assuming you'd never heard of him. But this is a collection of powers that include superhuman reflexes, wall climbing, G-force resistance, surprising speed, incredible balance and equilibrium, and some weirder powers for him to have. Like his spider sense, which is a danger sense that warns him of incoming danger, working much in the same way that my anxiety does. A sharp, intense, somewhat vague feeling that something terrible is about to happen. However, unlike my anxiety, it's useful sometimes. Because it also lets Spider-Man find things they shouldn't be able to, like hidden passages, lost items, or even calculate his web swings. The other thing he has is super strength, advertised with the proportional strength of a spider. Which, okay, I guess. But Spider-Man is actually exceptionally strong, something he isn't often given enough credit for. He's stronger than Thing, Hulk, Juggernaut, and Colossus, just to name a few. Which puts him at, like, Thor level at least. And he's still usually at least kinda holding back. Because Spider-Man isn't trying to hurt you, even if you have superpowers, so he's not gonna put his full force into anything. Oh, he also has the four extra arms thing, but we're not gonna talk about that. Also, fuck you guys, I'm going with the version of Spider-Man that makes webbings with a chemistry set. That's cooler. So then, who is Spider-Man behind the mask? Well, you'd be surprised, but it's Peter Parker, who in most continuities is either a high school or college student who's a photographer and journalist on the side. But he's been everything from the president of foundations, CEO of his own company, assistant to Tony Stark, and even a metahuman guidance counselor on living a good work-life balance, which is very ironic. Now, it's important to note that Spider-Man also has some weird, mystic, kooky nonsense associated with him. Basically, there's this goddess, Neith, right? And she created the Web of Life and Destiny, which is a physical scale model of all of reality, and is both sentient and allows for multiversal travel. The people able to do that are Neith's chosen, the Spider Totems, who are beings created by Neith to do her will, who can select avatars in the world by sending a magical spider to bite them with venom that gives them superpowers. And yes, that's Spider-Man. Comics are fucking weird, man. Anyways, now let's see how Spider-Man deals with his superheroing. Basically, he jumps in when things get out of hand or people's lives are at risk. He's not going to steal your rescue if you're a firefighter halfway down the ladder, but he will run into the fourth floor of a burning building because the stairs are blocked. Or during a police chase, he might show up. But he might also jump in real quick to help old ladies cross the street, stop a car accident, or help kids get their ball back if he's in the area. Real nice guy, Pete is. And the whole time, he's trying to keep things pretty happy and optimistic. Even when he's fighting with some big bads, he's quipping and trying to be friendly. He wears bright colors, red especially, to make himself the target. He likes protecting people and fixing problems, and serving as something tough and strong enough to directly intervene. He even actively tries to help his enemies, hear people out, and try to solve their problems if he can, or set them up with someone who can. But narratively, Spider-Man's purpose isn't necessarily his goodness. It's to get spanked by reality repeatedly. He's basically meant to be the dude who can never get ahead and is still a good guy that tries his best to help others and be friendly. So because of that, his stories are filled with a lot of angst, and also a lot of kicking him while he's down. He will always return back to the status quo of being a broke, lonely college student with a shitty boss and a city that doesn't appreciate his effort. But, like, he fucks a lot. Like, seriously, his list of sexual and or romantic partners includes She-Hulk, Carol Danvers, Black Widow, and of course the likes of Mary Jane Watson and Gwen Stacy. But, okay, before I get off in that direction, let's talk about the other half of this. Batman. Now, a lot of people will tell you that he doesn't have superpowers, but they're wrong, and they're stupid. Because this motherfucker has snapped a gun in half, ripped a sewer grate apart, and while I can't find the comic panel, he stopped a motherfucking train like he was doing a leg press. But the thing is, his superpower isn't super strength. His superpowers are his massive, massive intellect and unbelievable willpower. It is canon in the Bat-Metal series, so questionably, that he jailbroke a Green Lantern ring with nothing but his willpower, which is extremely impressive. He also would be an incredible Green Lantern in general, being on the high end of willpower humans are capable of. So much so that he can make his body and mind do things that aren't possible. He trained himself to take savant naps instead of fully resting. He runs himself to the point of collapsing consistently, figures out how to build insane gadgets, trains in basically all martial arts, learns whatever languages and fields of study he needs to, and willpowers his way out of experiencing the effects of drugs. That should be possible, and that might be the most unbelievable part. But who is Batman? Well, Bruce Wayne, billionaire CEO and philanthropist whose dick is much bigger than yours. That's basically always been the consistent. That's basically always been consistent with him, especially the dick. And much like Spider-Man, he has some mystic connection to humanity's ancient past and some kooky cosmic bullshit. So when Batman was blasted back in time by Darkseid's Omega Beams, because that's something that happened for some reason, he went back to the beginnings of humanity, where he encountered the Bat Tribe, one of the ancient tribes of humanity. And this tribe has produced Batman throughout history. Maybe. The continuity is fucking weird. Sometimes, I think it's implied that his parents became part of the tribe of the bird? Or like the tribe of the owl? And the court of owls are all tribe of the bat? Anyways. Let's talk about his approach to crime fighting. Well, he uses his personas as two sides of his way to address crime. Because, see, Batman isn't an idiot. He knows that you don't punch crime away. So he uses his Batman persona to intervene directly in things and keep the criminal underworld in a constant state of fear while subverting and sometimes outright fighting a notoriously incompetent and corrupt police department. And the Batman persona also lets him do much more dangerous stuff without consequence. He can intimidate whoever he wants, investigate things that get a target on his back, and go places he wouldn't be able to as Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne, meanwhile, being closely connected to Gotham old money and therefore the criminal underworld, is able to use that information to apply pressure, both monetarily and socially, to help push out corruption while using his philanthropy to do outreach, development, and cleanups to remove any reason for people becoming criminals in the first place. He'll even pay the hospital bills of Batman's victims, offer former henchmen jobs, support prison reforms, and help pay for the reasons people go to crime. Like, for example, if your daughter has leukemia and the only people hiring are Riddler and Penguin, and you're a big, strong bruiser type, well, after Batman finds this out, suddenly your daughter's hospital is receiving a massive cancer treatment donation for the entire children's wing, new experimental drugs free of charge, and also Wayne Industries is announcing the opening of a new factory that just so happens to need a shitload of local manual laborers. Which means you and about 200 of your closest friends have a new job. And given the astronomical number of children with cancer, Wayne Legal is also pursuing the property developer for unsafe living conditions, giving you a nice new apartment without asbestos in the walls, lead in the pipes, and fiberglass instead of drywall. This is also why Batman keeps sending villains to Arkham, because his villains, by and large, are mentally ill, not evil. Dangerous? Yes, but not technically evil. As far as why it's so ineffective, well, because Bruce Wayne doesn't see it as fixable. But it has enough of a success rate that it's the best option he has available at the moment. And also, to be fair, he doesn't send them to prison or Arkham. Gotham's legal system does. He just testifies that they need help. Also, I found online the reason why Bruce Wayne doesn't just buy Arkham and reform it himself. One is that he thinks it's not fixable. But also, because then he would feel like a jailer. Which is the dumbest fucking reason I've ever seen to not do anything. ever. Alternatively, he's never confronted the trauma of watching his parents die in front of him while he was helpless, and at this point, it's been so long, and this has been his way of dealing with the pain, that if he were to ever run out of villains to fight and problems to solve, he'd collapse in on himself, and he has consciously justified why he doesn't just buy Arkham and redeem it himself. Anyways, what's Batman's narrative purpose? Well, it's equal parts boogeyman and mentor. He's essentially the Lancer to Superman's champion. Batman works in the shadows to maintain peace and do the necessary evil to ensure life goes on. But he's also a mentor figure and strategist, making sure the new generations of heroes come up correctly and have their own Lancers, who simultaneously make sure the bright, optimistic, and cheery heroes of a setting are successful by laying out a strategy for it to work. He's at times morally ambiguous and even utilitarian or cruel in his thinking, but he's ultimately a good guy that just understands that the whole stay in school, say no to drugs spiel Clark brings isn't all that you need to make the world a better place. He's basically the harsh reality of reforms, justice, and building a better tomorrow made manifest. Now, while these characters are vastly different, you should be seeing some similarities. They're both genius inventors and engineers. They both have strange connections to humanity's origins. They both heavily use gadgets and have insane levels of willpower and try to help their villains. And they're both very involved in their universes. Batman has his Bat family and is also on the Justice League. Spider-Man has the Spider family and has been on the Avengers and the Fantastic Four and is good friends with both Wolverine and Deadpool, putting him in line to be in mutant-oriented stories. And they both get so much pussy. Like, it's insane. They both hook up with a lot of women of their universes, and their canonical main love interests are some of the most attractive women in their universes. Like, Spider-Man has Gwen Stacy, who has some... Yeah, let's not talk about her art. Mary Jane Watson, who, in addition to being very smart, is also a fucking model, and is canonically one of the most beautiful women in the world. And also Black Cat, who... I mean, I don't know if I have to say it, you can just look at the official art. Meanwhile, Batman has Talia al Ghul, who, let's be honest, would crack most of us immediately, Wonder Woman, who I want to get beat up by, and Catwoman, who, again, I'd want to get beaten up by. I don't have a problem, don't at me. So these guys are genius, mystical engineers that like to help people, have lots of friends, are well-respected, and lay pipe like a plumber. So the opposite of their fan base. Oh, shut up. I'm a fan, too. Alright, so instead of talking about all of their allies and enemies, because, trust me, that's a long list, we're just going to discuss both some notables as well as some interesting ones. Both Batman and Spider-Man have their own respective families, the Bat family and the Spider family being people with similar powers. If someone's in the Bat family, assume they're good at punching grown men in the skull until they have a brain blast and use some form of weapon or gadgetry. While for the Spider family, assume they have some vague set of spider powers, like wall climbing, web slinging, super strength, and spider sense. Spider-Man's family includes Scarlet Spider, one of two clones of Spider-Man, either Kane Parker or Ben Reilly, and yes, it's complicated, and yes, they normally have other powers too. Or a Spider-Woman, who has pheromone powers and bioelectricity, and also canonically has the best ass in all of Marvel. And yes, her and Spider-Man have been a thing before. Then there's Silk, who can track other Spider-People, Miles Morales, that can turn invisible and also has the stereotypical black person electricity powers, that's a real thing, look it up. Spider-Gwen, that is either an alternate reality version or clone of Gwen Stacy, can't find which one for the main universe, that is a better detective than Spider-Man is and can glide. And finally is Madame Web, a telepathic clairvoyant that can astrally project and is connected to all spider people and all spiders across the multiverse because she is the totem of Neith on Earth 616. But that isn't all of his friends, because remember, Spider-Man is both very likable and isn't a control freak. So his sometimes wife, sometimes girlfriend, sometimes simp target, Mary Jane is also in this category because she's the superhero jackpot, having a random power out of 343 every time she activates her watch. Which, Man, that is more useless than you would imagine. Not in story, but like in real life, that would be one of the most useless superpowers, because you could never know what you're going to come to a fight with. But he is also friends with Deadpool, Human Torch, Luke Cage, Daredevil, and Doctor Strange. Like, actual close friends. They hang out sometimes. And of course, there's also Black Cat, a main love interest with power over luck, and is an expert thief. Meanwhile, Batman, since he is a control freak, only has close allies that he works with all the time and trusts because they work under him directly. Like Damian Wayne, his son, or Tim Drake, his adoptive son, or Bluebird, his adoptive daughter, or Barbara Gordon, who used to be Batwoman until Batman banged her and the Joker paralyzed her. Yeah, Killing Joke is pretty fucked up. And Black Bat, Stephanie Brown, Catherine Kane, Jason Todd, and Dick Grayson. All of his adoptive children. He's pseudo-adopted a lot of kids. Take notes if you're into single dads. And while not often considering themselves part of the Bat family, Huntress, Batwing, Catwoman, and Alfred are all so close they might as well be. And he trusts them in the same way. Kind of. And in at least two cases, he's been in their pants. I'll let you decide which two. And for the most part, these characters have essentially the same powers. Except Nightwing. He's the sexiest man in DC. Literally, everyone in-universe agrees he's sexy and makes their super suits a bit tight in the front. Now, compared to their allies, they're kind of similar. Their enemies are in way different leagues. And it might not be surprising that Batman's villains are a bit scarier. Because Spider-Man has the likes of Green Goblin, Dr. Octopus, Scorpion, Hobgoblin, Sandman, Mysterio, Rhino, Electro, Shocker, Vulture, Hydra-Man, and Molten Man. Who, while sure can be scary sometimes, are just kind of fucking goofy. I mean, look at these guys. You're going to tell me that the man in a green suit with a lightning star on his face is intimidating? Or Mysterio's fishbowl? Now, to be fair to his rogues gallery, there are some actually terrifying enemies here, like Venom, Carnage, Lizard, and Mr. Negative. Even in concept, people like Morlun and Morbentime are pretty intimidating. But they're all people he can reason with. Hell, Eddie Brock and Curtis Connors are people he knows in his personal life. But he also fights people that are just genuinely and real-world horrifying. Kraven the Hunter, obsessed with hunting down the biggest game, and he decided that Spider-Man is that biggest game. And he wants to murder and field dress this actual real human being and display him on a mantle like a fucking serial killer. Mobsters like Kingpin and Tombstone, highly elite mercenaries like Bullseye and Chameleon, and Jackal, who makes Unit 731 to look like ethical science. But all that kind of pales in comparison to Batman's villains. Taking some of the least directly scary people, we have like Firefly, Killer Moth, Solomon Grundy, Mr. Freeze, and Harley Quinn. All of these people have had good guy turns. While Harley and Batman have some personal beef, she's mostly a hero now. Firefly and Killer Moth have both been cast in heroic roles in TV shows. Mr. Freeze often ends up helping Batman because he's just in it for the money. And Solomon Grundy is less actively violent and more just following whoever is generally kinda nice to him, and he doesn't care to know the details. But at the same time, these are a pyromaniac, an evil Batman, a zombie mobster, a man who just passively gives you hypothermia, and an attractive, mentally ill psychiatrist. Wood. Some of his bigger villains are mobsters or mobster stand-ins, like Two-Face, Penguin, and Black Mask. He also faces just like actual fucking psychos like Hush, who likes to steal faces, Zaz, an actual serial killer, Hugo Strange, who's an actual evil doctor, Mad Hatter, a simp with the ability to control minds with hats, and of course, the Joker. Of course, he also fights some literal goddamn monsters like Man-Bat and Killer Croc that choose to fucking eat people. Or people like Bane, Deadshot, Deathstroke, a known pedo by the way, and the Al Ghuls, that are all, like, terrifyingly smart people with very little morals and a very strong desire to kill someone. Of course, it does ignore, like, Clayface, Poison Ivy, Scarecrow, and Riddler, who aren't considered all that scary nowadays, but I want you to actually think about it. Someone who used to be a fucking genius in their field, gone absolutely insane, but now have superpowers and access to their old tools to conduct all sorts of terrorism. Clayface can look like anyone. Poison Ivy can make plants want to kill you. Scarecrow is constantly spiking the water supply like a scumbag frat boy, and Riddler is doing insane feats of engineering, construction, and architecture every day just to feed you high school level riddles. But there is something kind of cool here about their villains. There's a good amount of overlap. I mean, think about it. Really, if you think about it, Lizard is just a smarter Killer Croc. And Green Goblin and Killer Moth are pretty similar, with a bit of Hobgoblin in there too, as much as Hobgoblin is just Green Goblin but spookier. Bullseye and Deadshot are basically the same guy too. Same with Chameleon and Clayface. And in a fight, Sandman and Clayface are very similar too. And Kingpin is really just a more direct reflection of the mobsters like Penguin and Black Mask. Kraven is if Hush and Zazz had superpowers. Mysterio is like Mad Hatter, and it goes on and on like that. Really, the thing that makes Spider-Man villains super different from Batman villains is their AoE attacks, and that apparently Spider-Man's writers have a bondage fetish. Which, look, I'm not judging. I can go for some gay bondage, too. I'm just saying that we all see it. But okay, enough of this Deadliest Warriors bullshit, and let's get to the actual scenario. So we open up our comic in the sewers below New York, and simultaneously, in a surprisingly common abandoned warehouse in the outskirts of Gotham, where our hero, Spider-Batman, are fighting a villain that uses magic to create portals to different dimensions, like that one fantasy episode of Rick and Morty, but somehow not nearly as aware of fantasy tropes as that goddamn show managed to be. And just like we said up top, they're going in for the closing kick in the teeth when the wizard utters the forbidden word. D's. And suddenly, our Spider-Batman is kicking an entirely different wizard right in the jaw. After removing his ability to distinguish the smell of garlic from pepper, a few family memories, and about 8 teeth with a sturdy boot to the skull, our hero looks around and realizes, ah, fuck, I'm not in Kansas anymore. What happens from here? Well, let's start over on Earth 616. Batman realizes immediately he's in a sewer, and also, that wasn't the guy he was trying to kick. And given that he's currently trying to remember which left is up right now, it's not like Batman can ask him. So he does the classic. Ties him up in the filthy fucking sewer, and lays him in rescue position. And going up to the city streets to get his bearings, Batman sees the streets of New York City. But not his New York City. Because sure, to you and me, there's no difference between one filthy New York curb and another, but as any New Yorker will tell you, there's subtle differences between the 3/4 inch of unidentifiable sludge, takeout containers, and used needles that tells you exactly where you are. And Batman is very used to identifying sludge and used needles, being from New Jersey. Also, New York and DC doesn't have a ton of superpowered shit happening, so seeing about the same amount of construction and restoration work that you'd normally see in Metropolis means there's something different happening. Helped in that is that as Batman climbs the nearest building, he sees that the Baxter Building is now a 35-story skyscraper with a giant flaming 4 above it, and another one with a massive A is painted on its side. And it's at this moment that Batman frowns even deeper. He knows about all the superheroes in his universe, these are none of them. He's quickly realizing he isn't home anymore. But before we talk more about him, how's Spider-Man doing? Well, after realizing the stinky, stinky sewer smell is no longer wafting through his mask, and seeing that the wizard, that isn't his wizard, isn't in any state to be helpful while he's trying to count his teeth using the sauce codes of hentai he's read, so instead he ties him up, helpfully tells him he's missing 8 teeth, and he's sorry about that, and climbs to the top of the building. To see a place that, being a New Yorker, reminds him of New Jersey. If New Jersey was also Detroit, with West Virginia's drug problems. And given that he's never been somewhere in New Jersey this bad somehow, he's starting to get a tingly feeling something is off. Especially because looking in the parking lot, he sees a car shaped like a bat with a fucking jet engine on its back. Deciding this is a later problem to worry about, he swings into the city to figure out where exactly he is. Where he encounters his first problem. A mugging in process. Now, in New York, both in Marvel Comics and in the real world, muggings aren't nearly as common as you think they are. In Gotham, however, basically every street corner has at least one mugger. And in New York, sure, there's a risk of being a mugger, since Daredevil could arrive ready to beat some Catholic guilt into you, Luke Cage could just flex at you until you run away, or if you're especially unlucky, a man that probably voted for Trump with a skull t-shirt wielding a 50 cal can decide it's your turn to be introduced to the Conrad Kurz University of Justice. So you gotta be at least a bit desperate, but not too much. Gotham, meanwhile, every fucking street and alleyway is owned by some gang or mobster. Even ignoring that, the water supply gets spiked so often with Joker toxin, fear toxin, or venom, that doctors automatically just add it to your drug interaction list if you drink Gotham water. A water supply, mind you, that probably still uses original lead pipes and comes out the tap looking like chocolate milk. The air also smells like crack cocaine, Joker toxin, fear toxin, venom, blood, and pollutants that would make the cigarette industry come in their pants. So to be a mugger in Gotham, you need to be desperate, aka live in Gotham, and be violent enough to be left alone by roving street gangs, but small fries enough that mobsters don't care and Joker isn't actively trying to recruit you. Basically what I'm saying is, if a New York mugger from Marvel fought a Gotham mugger, you might as well throw a middle schooler with behavioral issues into a dumpster with a rabid German Shepherd addicted to crack who's convinced his next fix is somewhere in that middle schooler's abdominal cavity. So Spider-Man swings down, ready to quip at this guy and tell him to fuck off before he gets hurt, and the mugger turns and responds, "I'm going to chew on your entrails," and moans. Now, is this going to give Spider-Man a run for his money? No. Spider-Man has fought multiple superhuman wars and had more bad days than your average nurse practitioner. But after solving that, assuming the victim is still around, he'll probably ask, "Hey, where the fuck am I?" And while the response is probably going to be, "Well, you're in Gotham," he doesn't know where the fuck that is. But the moment he climbs the tallest tower he can find and tries to give his buddies a call, he's probably going to figure out that he's not in his world anymore. Because he also knows about the wacky, goofy cosmic stuff. But back to Batman. Now that he's gotten his bearings, he needs to take stock of what's going on and what this new place is like. Now, granted, he isn't going to stand out, given that it's Marvel and a dude dressed in weird clothes running through the streets or stalking across rooftops isn't that weird. But then suddenly, while he's running across rooftops, a bat shape screeches above him with the sound of a jet engine. Looking up, he sees this fucking goober dressed up as a goblin as he throws a pumpkin into traffic below. The subsequent explosion kills a family of four. Overcome by rage, Batman launches a grappling hook into the back of the glider, and Green Goblin, sensing the sudden weight of a linebacker on his glider, turns around to see a dude dressed as a bat rapidly approaching his position. And of course, being used to Marvel-style quips, especially from Spider-Man, he prepares his counter-quip. Just to nearly get rocked in the goddamn jaw. Now, here's the deal with the Green Goblin. He's very strong, very fast, and a psychopath on drugs that turns him into a super soldier apex predator. But he doesn't have any formal training. Which is why he can kick the shit out of Spider-Man, because Spider-Man went to a karate dojo as a grade schooler for the full extent of his training. However, Batman has a black belt level of mastery of 128 different martial arts and is adept in at least 180. We might need to change the definition of insanity. So, very quickly, Green Goblin is laying on a rooftop with a few broken ribs, CTE, and his glider and gadgets missing. Meanwhile, Spider-Man is having an equally easy time with one of Batman's villains. Given that Spider-Man still isn't completely aware of where he is, but that there's always something going down in Gotham, he starts stalking the streets and happens across a man wearing a purple suit with white face paint and green hair. Now, I know some of you are going to be pissed at what I'm about to say, but I agree with a Tumblr user. The moment that Spider-Man sees that Joker and his gooners are pouring some unknown substance into the drain, he's going to say something. Probably something lame and cheesy like, "Aren't you supposed to have a permit for that?" And while Joker is used to fighting Batman, he's not opposed to fighting any costume cum stain that crosses his path, especially in Gotham, and especially if they're a schizophrenic delusion. And almost immediately, he's throwing a temper tantrum. Because, as explored in Batman Beyond, the Joker is used to dealing with Batman. Someone who takes him seriously and doesn't make jokes. The Joker, more than anything else, is a narcissist. He needs to feel like the main character and that everyone else is the NPC. Like people who unironically post Joker memes. So the second someone starts to clap back on his level, he has a meltdown. Because suddenly, he's not controlling the narrative. He makes the same lame jokes over and over again, while Spider-Man is showing what it's like growing up on Xbox Live lobbies. But since Spider-Man is also way out of his league in a fight, given that Spider-Man's Spider-Sense would warn him of Joker's primary advantage in a fight, being entirely unpredictable and random, so he just breaks Joker entirely. Now that Batman has a glider and some more gear, he starts to head towards one of the towers in the distance. No, don't even think it. But let's say he goes to the Baxter Building, using his impressive breaking and entering skills to get into Reed Richards' lab. And unfortunately for him, it's empty. But hey, good attempt. However, it is lucky that he's here. Because while the Fantastic Four are away and Spider-Man is distracted, fighting a fucking wizard, the Sinister Six decide it's a good time to rob them. Now, sure, is this a plot convenience? Yes, but I wanted to show off how good Batman would be against Spider-Man's villains. And we're going with the OG lineup. So, as Batman is snooping around, suddenly the window he slyly opened to get in fucking explodes in a shower of glass all over Richard's lab, and a squad of goobers climbs on in. Vulture, Sandman, Mysterio, Kraven, Electro, and Doc Ock. Now, while Batman knows he's not supposed to be there, he also knows these guys definitely aren't. I mean, for one, there's six of them, not four, and secondly, they're holding comically large bank robbery bags. And taking a look at them, honestly, it's not hard to figure out what three of them do. A man in a lightning suit, a man with wings, and a man with octopus arms isn't subtle. So, pulling out his innate jersey, he goes for the one of the three that'll probably cause him the most trouble. Doc Ock. Because while he's dealt with mid-40s bondage bears before, it's not usually in this context. So, boom, surprise attack from the shadows in close combat. And the Sinister Six aren't expecting this, since Spider-Man, their main enemy, is quippy and wears bright colors. But after knocking Doc Ock's doctorate out of his brain, Batman turns, standing over him, to the surprised room, and takes stock. Three look surprised, one has a fishbowl on his head, and Kraven looks fully erect. And again, not the right context. So that guy's probably the next biggest threat. Until the walls start melting and the devil tells him to invest in apples. And suddenly there's about two dozen Kravens in this room that's now made of Laffy Taffy and dead parents. Which was his tip-off that he's been drugged. So using his immense willpower and his history of ignoring drugs, he goes, "Nah, I'd win," like Gojo, and decides, "I'm not drugged." And he looks behind him to Mysterio, with hands out dramatically and gas pouring from his fingers. So he tosses a few batarangs at him, which, while they hit him, don't seem to do much. Now with his enemies recovering from the shock of one of their teammates getting pummeled, Batman disappears in the shadows again. Which is also kind of part of the plan. Because Kraven can track him, meaning Kraven slinks in the shadows too. And when comparing Batman and someone with super soldier-like abilities and weapons expertise, suddenly, Kraven looks like Deathstroke without the underage Discord kitten and no guns. Oh, and also, no armor. So Batman pulls out his batarangs and starts hurling them at Kraven, who does the whole supervillain thing of catching one. So Batman does the Batman thing, and that was the taser one. And now that he's on the ground, Batman starts beating his ass. Now, since no part of this has been quiet, the others come to help. Electro launches out a blast, which throws Batman across the room, and as Sandman and Vulture close into a Batman on his hands and knees, Mysterio and Electro get Kraven back on his feet. Now, given that Batman is basically now just faced with a man-bat and Clayface, but very clearly made out of sand. So, once Vulture is turned into the joke they almost always is, he turns full attention to Sandman, and tases the shit out of him before tripping the sprinkler system. And at this point, given that half the team are down, Electro and Mysterio book it. And in a one-on-one fight, Batman beats the shit out of Kraven. However, this fight takes long enough that the Fantastic Four return home after getting some wild ring camera footage. And they arrive to Batman tying up four Spider-Man villains like the end of a Scooby-Doo episode, and Batman turns to them and asks, "Where am I?" Back to Spider-Man. He's back on his patrol, just randomly going around trying to get somewhere where someone can tell him what's going on. Until he sees a signal in the distance. Now, while the light of the signal is definitely not for him, given that it's shaped like a bat, he's also used the signal lights. In addition to jackasses using it to call him, he's also seen a similar signal for the Fantastic Four. So he goes to the source of the signal to find a very stressed-out cop on the rooftop. Now, Gordon is used to dealing with the Bat Family when Batman is busy, but this guy is clearly not Bat Family, because he's friendly, and he's wearing bright colors. But beggars can't be choosers, and there's a breakout at Arkham that needs attention right now. So this guy asks for directions, which sure, Spider-Man would need them, but if you were told, go to the asylum, the large gothic building at the top of a hill with floodlights and alarm sounds is probably a good guess. So Spider-Man swings over there and hangs out in a tree to get his bearings. Now, he's not a dumbass, so he's just scouting things out for a moment. And he sees Bane, Scarecrow, Poison Ivy, Killer Croc, Clayface, and Mr. Freeze. And drawing some parallels to his own rogues gallery, he figures he's got this in the bag. But Spider-Man, unlike Batman, doesn't look to disable the biggest threats that he knows of. He aims to disable the biggest advantages his enemies think they have, which is usually similar, but different in important ways. So instead of going for someone like Scarecrow or Poison Ivy, he takes aim at Killer Croc and Bane. He swings down, launches sticky goo at both of them, webbing up Killer Croc pretty effectively, but not Bane, because Bane is a fucking beefcake. So he figures, okay, so I got the Lizard of this universe done, and the other big guys like Rhino. So he taunts Bane. And everyone's surprised for a second, Bane most of all, because no one in the Bat Family has ever done that before. And now Spider-Man, Spider-Sense, is going bonkers, and he dodges a combination of the tree behind him trying to stab him, a blast of ice, and a syringe of something flying towards him. Changing targets, he goos the Ice Guy's helmet so he can't see Scarecrow's eyes, and reinforces the webs on Killer Croc because he's like 90% through them. Because while Batman excels at stealth and sneak attacks, Spider-Man excels at crowd control. Unfortunately, he's about to learn that Batman's villains are a lot harder to manage, because he goads Bane into charging him, expecting him to go full speed like Rhino. So he does the classic Spider-Man flip over his back, right into a reverse elbow that sends him flying to the ground. Because Bane is basically as smart as Batman is. Taking the chance with him stunned, the recovering Scarecrow sticks Spider-Man with a needle. Now, when fighting a normal heroin junkie, this is a day-ruining forbidden kata. But when fighting Scarecrow, this is a life-ruining maneuver. Immediately, Spider-Man's spider senses are going haywire as his biggest fears start manifesting. He can't control his spider sense, and now he's lost one entire sense to overload. Trying to get away, he shoots a web in a nearby tree, only for it to grab at the end of the web and reveal itself as Clayface, who pulls him in as he shoots another web, rocking into a tree branch, Poison Ivy moved, throwing Spider-Man to the ground again. And Bane and Killer Croc immediately start kicking the shit out of him. Because remember, Spider-Man always gets the shit end of the deal. Until Batarangs appear from the darkness, bullets and crossbow bolts start flying, and a young boy with a sword starts totally not killing. And Spider-Man is saved by the Bat Family. And why are they here? Well, seeing how long the Bat signal was on before anyone responded, they knew Batman isn't here. And Gordon told them he sent the guy to Arkham to help out. Which is as terrifying as it should sound. Added to that, they know it wasn't Batman, because even if they didn't ask, someone broke the Joker. That hasn't happened before. So now that they're here to help Spider-Man, they can mop up pretty quickly. And after a quick chat, they know it's happening and are willing to help, since, you know, they want their dad back. And this is where the storylines converge, because with a few phone calls and dubious science, both sides of the portal can get their favorite superhero back. With the portal open, Spider-Man and Batman meet in the middle of the portal and do the Predator clasp hand handshake, and give each other some insights about their villains they notice along the way. Like, Batman tells Spider-Man to take some martial arts classes and that sweet taser boot to the face combo against Kraven. And Spider-Man tells Batman some crowd control techniques. Hell, maybe even Batman slips him the formula for an antitoxin against Mysterio's gases, and Spider-Man slips him designs for web spinners. And maybe, just maybe, they even slip in a little kiss. You don't know. What happens between dimensions stays between dimensions. And with that, everyone returns home, safe and sound. Of course, this is just one way this could go of many. I mean, this is already a long episode, and this is a short version of what might happen. If you have your own ideas on how this would go, let me know. I mean, hell, there's a lot of different paths we didn't even discuss. Fighting organized crime, being trapped for a long time, needing to rely more on allies. Everything along those lines. But, yeah. Thank you for hearing me out and listening and or watching to this episode, and supporting me trying something new. I'm pretty sure next episode will be shorter, but anyways, if you have opinions, improvements, corrections, or anything else that you would like to talk about, comment down below or email me at waytatpods@gmail.com. That's waytatpods@gmail.com. And remember to like, share, and subscribe for more. Follow my podcast feed for audio versions, and come back next time when we try to merge two settings once again. Have a good night, don't murder, have fun, and remember, Marvel and DC have a lot more bondage than you would initially think. This has been Why Aren't You Talking About This? I've been your host, William. Good night.